Yeah, give me the finger, Don. Today's podcast.
No, no, you gotta wait for the clap.
Wait for the clap. Yeah.
What was that?
That was nothing.
It was not a clap.
That was the computer clicking. That's the clap.
And today's podcast is brought to you by Petzl Headlamps. Don, do you have a tip for us?
Did you read that, Sally?
I did it.
Perfect enunciation, by the way. I do have a tip. And I found lightning in a bottle. I found the magic potion. That's what I found.
I'm impressed. What is in that potion?
You know, I have searched long and hard for this secret, and I have stumbled on it this morning, and it's so simple. And I remind myself of this every single time. I had the most awesome run this morning.
I should have been there.
Do you know when you just feel like, man, what's happening? I'm getting back in shape. My legs feel good. Maybe it's part of the fall weather, so a little bit, you know, it's a little bit cooler, and everything's clicking right. And then I realized, you know what? I went to sleep on time.
Ooh.
And there, you know, as many times as I like to try to test this theory and prove it wrong, it's consistently you get sleep, you run strong, you feel good, clean good thoughts through your head, you're solving problems. Sleep is amazing.
I will test to that because I texted him at 9 p.m. and he said, I'm in bed. That's yes. Impressive.
Yeah. Right? You know, I texted you back all those little Z's that are on that new operating system. That's where I am. What about you, Sally? Are you a sleeper?
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Don. When I get good rest, my training is better. My whole day is better. All around win.
And so there's the real advantage of a Petzl headlamp, right? You can define your day not in from sun up to sundown, but you can dice it, slice it, configure it any way that fits your sleep schedule, work schedule, life schedule. Put the headlamp on and get your mileage in.
I bet you when it's like dark 20 hours a day in Alaska,
yeah,
where Jeff Rose is,
yes,
he can use a Petzl headlamp and he doesn't have to worry about those 3 hours that it's light outside.
Well, if you run as fast as Jeff Rose, you can get a lot of mileage in 3 hours, Scott Orr. So go to Petzl.com, check out their Tika RXP, the rechargeable.
Their new now.
Reactive lighting, the new now. Good stuff. Audiblepodcast.com/TRN. There's gifts waiting for you.
Well, one gift in particular, and that's a free audiobook download. Who doesn't like free, Don?
I do.
Go and grab audiblepodcast.com/TRN. I'm going to tell you about one that you should if you haven't already downloaded. It's called Wild, From Lost to Found on the Pacific Crest Trail. Hmm. It's by Cheryl Strayed. There's a movie coming out in December of 2014 starring Reese Witherspoon that is an adaptation of this book. It's a great book. Go get it. Get it for free, Don. Why not?
Scott, how is it that you always seem to have book after book listened to? Every time we go on a trail run, I'm envious of your vast exposure.
Because there's lots of times in your day when you can't necessarily read a book, but you can listen. You can just put the earphones in if you're mowing your lawn, driving your car, going on a trail run. There's lots of time when you can put the earbuds in instead of listening to music. Listen to a book.
Over 150,000 to choose from. There's got to be something to help you improve whatever you need improving.
Go to audiblepodcast.com/TRN.
Are we recording?
Dr. Romanoff, you're probably very experienced at professional interviews. This is not one of them.
Come on. Don't put yourself down.
we are very casual. That's a good word.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott Warr.
And I'm Sally McRae.
And today we have Jeff Rose with us. And if any of you have subscribed to Ultra Running Magazine, the September issue in 2014 has a great article that Jeff wrote entitled Working My Way Back. And for me, I read this article and it really hit home for me. And I thought, you know what? It's time to get Jeff Rose back on the line. So thanks for joining us, Jeff.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Just to let you know, we have the Western Hemisphere covered. Sally's down in Southern California. We're in Northern California, and Jeff is in beautiful Alaska. Anchorage, right?
Yeah, no, Juneau.
Oh, Juneau. That's right. I knew it was Juneau.
Hey, Jeff, yeah. I'm just going to have to show my ignorance. And this is Don. So if anybody gets, you know, thinking it might be Scott that's making this statement.
No, Don is showing his ignorance.
I just think of you up there on a glacier running. Do you get a chance to get, you know, dirt on your shoes?
Yeah, you know, it varies a lot from year to year. This year was a very low snow year here. So most of the running this summer summer, the term summer is different in Alaska. Summer means like the 2 weeks where it's warm and sunny, but most of the summer here has been, you know, running on dirt and clear trails. But other summers we go into early to mid August running a lot on snowpack. But
are you full time in Alaska, or are you splitting time between Alaska and Netherlands?
I am now back to full time here as of this year. My wife was in school down there, and she finished that program in May, so we're back here full time.
Okay, good. Well, if those that are listening have not heard of Jeff Rose, you can climb out from underneath your rock now, and we'll tell you a little bit about him. Jeff has an amazing career and resume in running. In 2009 through 2011, I'm going to say, he was on fire. He won a lot of 100-mile races, including the Bear, which just happened last weekend this year. Hurt 100, which is an amazing race. Wasatch, he won twice. Western States, he won, and that's probably was documented in one of my favorite films, Unbreakable. DRTE down in Santa Barbara, he won. And another one, which I'm not familiar with, is the Susitna. Is that how it's pronounced?
Susitna, yeah. Yep.
So, you know, Jeff has had an amazing career. And then he's been fairly public about it, kind of dropped off of the map for a little while, and just went low-key for, I think, all of 2012, 2013, pretty much. And raced, I think, a race earlier this year. But his article, Working My Way Back, talks about kind of what happened. And the part that I like about this whole article is how frustrating it is for runners when they're injured to work through that injury. And sometimes it's real hard to have patience. And one of the problem-solving techniques that we as ultra runners have is we want to know, you know, we come into an aid station and our gut is not feeling well. We want to know why it's not feeling well. Make a deduction, make a change in what we're eating or whatever. So we're problem solvers, where we always say, okay, what is wrong? Once we find out what is wrong, then we correct it and we go on and we can repair ourselves. And you talk about how that was not the case in your situation, and that, it was very difficult to come to the realization that you weren't sure what was wrong with you. Can you kind of go through that and relate that for us?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very accurate description. Like, I went through, I guess in the initial phase, which would have been right around 2 years ago now, kind of August, September of 2012, just this long period of really probably 2 to 3 months in which I just felt like I had to know, you know, what's going on. There's something going on in my body, obviously, and I need to know what it is. And it felt there was this really strong importance on that. And like, you tied it to running and kind of, you know, if you're struggling in a run, you want to know why and figure it out. And and I just, you know, for that few months, that was my focus almost constantly, was, you know, doctor after doctor, or talking to various professionals or anybody I could really latch onto to get information from, like trying to find somebody to tell me what's wrong and what's going on exactly in my body. And
Jeff, you know, can I interrupt real quick? What exactly, what were the the side effects, or what were the things you were experiencing?
Kind of in that initial phase, it was a little bit of everything. I mean, I had severe headaches and dizziness and kind of a lot of those like more neurological manifestations, I guess, where I have numbness and like the head and neck ache and whatnot. But then also just a lot of extreme fatigue, a lot of gastrointestinal stuff where I just would have like a pain in my stomach that would sometimes last for 72 hours straight.
That, oh, wow.
Kind of inexplicable. And I had random like fevers where I would just get really hot, feverish for 20 or 30 minutes, or I'd wake up at night with an extreme fever. And I had a lot of skin type stuff where I'd have hot or cold feelings all over my skin.
Wow.
And you know, things just really kind of a little bit of everything. I mean, when I think back to various symptoms I had in that early phase, you know, now and then I'll have things pop into my mind like, oh yeah, that's right, I had this going on, and I in the 2 years since then, I've forgotten even a lot of the stuff, and I kind of wrote a lot of it down at the time, so if I ever do look back through that, which I tend not to anymore, because it's just kind of depressing to think about it all and look at it, but
exhausting.
When I do, it's kind of like, oh yeah, that's right, I had this, and I had that, and various stuff. So
were you keeping a journal at that time, it sounds like, or is that
not? Yeah, I kept, one of the first doctors I saw recommended that. He said, you know, just kind of every day write down the different things you're feeling and sort of keep track of, you know, the severity in a given day and try to find some patterns, and, you know, which ultimately I was never really able to find patterns even to this point, to over 2 years later. It's one of the things that's been hard about accepting it all and sort of moving forward without a definitive understanding of what's going on has been how little of a pattern there is. I mean, I feel like sometimes when I rest excessively, I feel better, and other times when I rest excessively, I feel worse, and it just kind of almost seems like this random ebb and flow of symptoms, which have generally improved over time, but still to this day, it kind of flare up and bother me now and then. So
when you started feeling bad, I mean, did you still try to run, or was it debilitating where you just couldn't get out to run?
I was actually going to touch on that question too, Scott, because Jeff, you had written an article back in April. In 2013, it was titled "One Story of Overtraining," or I Run Far. And you ended the article by saying, I knew something was wrong in my body for about 18 months, but it didn't do enough about it before it was too late. Do you look back on that with regret and blame and blaming yourself? Or do you just realize that it's just, it is what it is, and was there really anything that you could do about it? I know sometimes people come down with stuff that is just completely out of their control, you know. And I would imagine this kind of affects you emotionally and mentally too. I mean, when your body is not feeling well, you're constantly tired, you're constantly hurting. I mean, it just affects your total, your overall well-being. And, you know, and I think in comparison, you know, to that quote into the article that you just recently wrote, you know, on one hand, it's saying, hey, you know, it is what it is, and I'm getting better. And, you know, how are you coping just even, you know, mentally with both of those things? Cause again, like I said before, I mean, I've talked to people, it's like stuff like this happens and there isn't really a one reason, and they can be doing the same thing that somebody else is doing and the other person's totally fine.
Yeah. No, and I vacillate a lot on it in terms of understanding it and coping with it, and
right.
I'll go through phases where I feel like, oh yeah, had I just sort of taken that whole year off before I hit these severe symptoms, who knows, maybe I never would have had any of this. And then I have other times when I definitely feel like, you know what, maybe it wouldn't have mattered at all. And, and I was just kind of, you know, because I still just, without having had any sort of definitive diagnosis, like the overtraining thing's been sort of convenient to latch onto and look at as a possibility. And right. I think there's a really high likelihood that that's been sort of what I've been dealing with. And I also feel like, you know, it might entirely be something, you know, some random obscure virus that I came down with a while ago that I just, you know, that nobody has been able to identify and
right.
thrown my body into some kind of spiral of sort of autoimmunity type stuff or whatever. You know, I mean, it's just the possibilities are somewhat endless when you don't have a definitive answer. And so
right.
it's been hard to like cope with it all and understand it all.
Because, absolutely.
You know, again, going back to without knowing what's going on for sure. And, but yeah, but like touching that on the question that I guess it was Scott that had about, you know, was I able to run, kind of when I started getting all those symptoms and stuff, and it was really pretty quickly it was not even a possibility for me to run, just in terms of physical, like I could go out and run, but it just felt absolutely horrible to do so. And
right.
So that's, I mean, just going back to kind of touching on the kind of the severity of everything in the initial phase, whereas, you know, in the, I don't know, 14 or 16 months, mostly,
yeah.
it's more like I can go out and run, you know, pretty much every day if I want to, but I can't necessarily string together a consistent running.
When you finally said, you know what, there's something wrong, I need to go to a doctor, What were the doctor's reactions? Did they really? I don't want to say this as a diss to the doctor community, but did you find that they were a little bit empathetic with you? You know, you're a professional runner. Were they trying to do everything they could to find out what was wrong, or is they just said, you know what, you're probably overtrained, go home and rest?
You know, I would say I got a kind of a combination. The first doctor I went and saw, I was sort of fortunate with, you know, I kind of randomly chose him. He was a sports doctor in Boulder, and he was definitely pretty empathetic to my situation and was, you know, I think initially he very much was like, yeah, you just, you know, a few months, like, just do nothing, like, total like kind of excessive rest for 3 months and you're going to feel a lot better. But then when I didn't feel that much better after half of that time was up and I saw him again, he started to take it a little bit more seriously in terms of looking at it as maybe a somewhat unique case as compared to some other overtraining instances he had dealt with. And I saw him most recently, it's been a while now, as recently as April, and he's still very like, gosh, I wish there's just something missing, you know, there's a piece here. And he really worked with me to try to figure out those pieces. And other doctors I saw were similarly like sort of empathetic towards trying to figure it out. But there were definitely a few that just said, oh, well, you're just, you know, you run 100-mile races, like this is bound to happen to you, like you just kind of suck it up and rest for a while and you'll feel better.
Hey, Jeff, did you get a chance to talk to other athletes, other you know, competitors that may have experienced something similar?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I would have, especially with as open as I was about what I was going through, I would have people kind of reach out to me and, you know, whether they were someone who had been through a similar thing previously and they had some advice to give, or if it was somebody kind of going through something at the time and were looking for answers of their own. I was able to kind of communicate with a lot of people. It was surprising to me to see how many people in the sport maybe have, you know, not exactly the same. Everybody's story is a little bit different, but certainly a lot of people have similar things going on that they're working to try to figure out what's going on or how to cope with it. And, and early on I learned through that to be pretty careful about not taking someone else's story too serious and too literal. And, you know, initially it was easy to look at somebody who, you know, they described some symptoms and like, oh my gosh, I've had those same symptoms. Like, okay, what did you do? And if I just figure out what they did to feel better, to deal with it, then everything's going to be sort of good for me and I'm going to sort of move forward and figure it out. But pretty early on, I recognized that, you know what, I've had so many symptoms that some random person can describe a half a dozen symptoms they've had, and I've probably had all of them because for a while, pretty much every system of my body was affected. And so I, there was a period of time where I purposely sort of steered clear of reading too much into other people's stories, mm-hmm. because I wanted to really figure out exactly what was going to work for me. So
at what point, you know, this whole thing of trying to find out, again, like I said at the beginning, you know, we're problem solvers as ultra runners. At what point did you say, you know what, I'm not going to find the answer? And how did you feel when you came to that point in your life?
It happened in, you know, a course of steps. A lot of it was sort of last fall, like the autumn of 2013. And I felt a fair bit better over the summer of that year. But then I felt not so good again in the early part of the fall. And I was really like fighting it and mentally and emotionally and was really frustrated and just, you know, kind of, once you take a few steps forward, if you suddenly take a step back to where you were 4, 5, 6 months ago, it's hard to cope with initially. But I realized that the kind of the stress and the anxiety and the fear and the frustration that I was having was making the whole situation worse, you know. And I remember one doctor that I was seeing, he was really touching on the whole kind of emotional and lifestyle stress thing and trying to pinpoint, you know, have you had any, you know, life stressors? I mean, he said to me finally, he said, what's the most stressful thing that you've kind of traumatic or just a stressful situation you've been in or gone through in your life? And he was trying to pinpoint it back, you know, even to something years or decades ago. And I said to him, like, this health situation right now is by far the most stressful thing I've gone through in my life. And he sort of saw that, saw how much it was working at me and eating at me. And he kind of said, well, that shows me how difficult this is for you, but it also shows me how important it is to let go of some of that, because at this point, that's just feeding the fire. And that stress alone is probably causing me to regress back into, you know, other phases of it. And then just sort of gradually over the course of several months, I would come closer and closer to just kind of just accepting that, okay, this is what it is, and I don't know what it is, and I may never know what it is definitively, and I'm just going to, like, get up each day and sort of work with what I have and move forward from there. And, you know, and I pretty soon after really, really truly coming to the, you know, for a while I sort of told myself all those things, but I didn't quite believe it, or I wasn't quite living it. And then sometime around late fall last year, November-ish, I really started to live my life that way every day, and to wake up each day feeling that, just waking up feeling like, okay, well, whatever I feel today, that's what I have to work with, and I'm just going to move forward from there and not worry if today I feel worse than I did the day before or whatever. And you know, very soon after that, after really coming to that place, I did start to feel a lot better. And I think just relieving some of that stress over my condition, over my health, was a huge step forward for me. And, you know, that's not to say I haven't had kind of setbacks since then, but when I have had setbacks, I've sort of coped with them much better. So
Jeff, with the time that you weren't on the trail, what did you do with all of your newfound time if you weren't able to get out there and put the miles in?
Well, I mean, you know, the initial phase, I was so sick that it was just, I didn't feel like I had any extra time because I just was laying in bed a lot, and really, for that first few months anyway, was really the extra time was devoted to just resting and trying to get healthy enough to just have a normal day-to-day life. And then once that came around enough that I could have, for the most part, a normal day-to-day life, definitely a period of time where it was like, wow, this is weird. Like, what do I do now? Because I'm still more or less, you know, I'm kind of by profession, I'm still kind of a professional runner, but I can't really run. And it was a weird place to be for a while. And then, you know, over time, I kind of scaled back in terms of just looking at, okay, what are some other things I'm gonna do to fill up time, and just in looking for some other hobbies, and trying to just be much more present and involved with my family, which was really nice. And I think my stepdaughter was in first grade last year, and I feel like her year in kindergarten, I don't know, was my first year being really sick, and I almost felt like I hardly experienced her school because I was just really sick all year. And so last year it was really exciting to be involved with her life and her school a little bit more. And I just, you know, things which I guess anybody does to kind of pass time, like reading a lot more and just taking on other little activities and hobbies. But I, you know, throughout it, I was able to maintain, at least in terms of kind of from a professional income standpoint, I was able to maintain my running base stuff through writing that I do and through the running camps that I do. I was fortunate enough to not have to take like a year or a season off from running camps that I do here in Alaska in the summer. And so that takes up a fair bit of time itself. And it was kind of funny because there isn't one thing that like I feel like definitively filled the void of the 20, 25, 30 hours a week that I would spend out on the trails. But at the same time, I never really felt like I had a lot of extra like time. I guess life, you know, you find things that just end up filling in the gaps without even realizing it. And
go ahead.
And just now for most of the past year, I've been able to kind of somewhat regularly get back out and maybe, you know, maybe be 10, 12 hours a week that I'm out running.
You know, we all know runners, or even ourselves, that have experienced, maybe not to the extent that you did, but some whatever health issues. You know, Anna Frost has talked publicly about what she went through last year. Don and I have a very good friend that was battling cancer for a long time, and you know, watching him, he defined himself as a runner. And when it got to the point where he couldn't run anymore, you could see that happiness, I mean, it set in some depression, where he it was tough for him to come to the realization that he wasn't a runner anymore, or at least in his mind he wasn't. I still consider him a runner. But you know, how did you overcome that? The idea that you don't need running, at least at the level that you were running before, to dictate how happy you are?
You know, it more than anything, I think just time. It certainly was something I struggled with for on and off the better part of the first year that I wasn't able to run much. It was weird. It was hard to accept it. And I don't know that I ever had any one specific means of kind of doing so. And I think it's still just a process that I'm in the middle of and that I work on most every day. But certainly over time, I've just come to, you know, things that I've learned by going through this have helped me to look at it. You know, and you start to, I guess over time too, in my situation, I think I started to just be some, I guess what you'd call silver linings, and look at like, okay, well, this sort of gives me these other opportunities. You know, in terms of where everything ends up going in the end, I guess I feel like I'm still sort of somewhere in the middle of that path and that battle. And it's been hard for sure. That whole aspect has been probably the hardest thing about it.
You know, I don't
know. Re-identifying. So go ahead, Sally.
Sorry, I totally interrupted you, Jeff. I just wanted to say that I really have appreciated how open you've been throughout all of this. Before every podcast, I like to do quite a bit of research on whoever it is that we're talking with. And so It was really cool. I mean, if you just Google your name, tons of articles come up. And for our listeners, if you have a few moments and you want to be inspired or encouraged, just Google Jeff Rowe's name and you'll get these awesome articles. You get really cool videos that pop up. One that I saw repeatedly, Jeff, was many people that interviewed you would say things about how shy you are, your humility, and just a all around really, really nice guy. And I think what is so neat, a lot of times when we think of someone as being shy, we would think of someone that just is really closed and isn't going to open up. But you've been incredibly candid with you know, the struggle that you've been going with your health, but also some other things. And one of the things that out of all the articles I read, and I read quite a few, but one of my favorite ones was actually your, it was your blog post from March, this past year, March 2014. And I think March 12th, where you talked about your friend Glenn Frick. And I was just so moved by that, because the way that I had come across, the way that I had ended up back onto your site was, you know, I was doing the search and stuff, but I had first come across this little video that Cliff Bar did on you. And I think it was Outside Magazine, their Outside Online website had posted it. And it's just this quick minute 40 video. I'm sure you remember it, but it was posted last year, September last year. And they do such a great job of really just summing up your love for the mountains. And I think as I read through all of these articles, and then I came across this blog post, and then I watched this video, the overall picture that I got of you is that you are somebody that just genuinely just loves running, that you love running, you love adventuring. And I think you even say at one point, you know, I love racing, but 99% of the running I do is exploring, and that you love just leaving the trail, and that there's a part where you no longer think of yourself as a runner, that you're rather just out on an adventure. And you say, that's why I'm out there. I lose myself in the mountains. And it just paints this really beautiful picture of you. And you know, so many of us that, and for those of you listening that are brand new to trail running, or that have always, you know, Jeff has been your hero. He's been your inspiration. And a lot of times we choose our heroes because it's like, wow, they have so many wins, and they're, you know, the way that they can push their bodies in these races is just incredible. And, you know, and then to be so public about, you know, the physical ailment and how that's essentially taking you out of your love for racing. But really, when it comes down to it, it's like so much of the struggle and what you have shared, that has been like the greatest inspiration out of all of it. And that your pure love for running has actually kept you in the community. And so when I came across this blog post and you started talking about your friend Glenn, man, it was just so beautiful. And you say that he is by far, you know, he's your biggest running hero, but your biggest life hero, and that you'll never go into the mountains without thinking about him and the hours that you spent with him. And I know it's so hard to lose such a close and dear friend, but the way that you talk about him, how he has inspired you, and the things that he did with his life, and what he showed you as a running mentor, it's been really neat, because I've tracked with you this past year, and it seems that you've kind of carried on his legacy. And you know, you've been spending, if you can't race, you've been spending your time then doing these camps, and you've been volunteering at races like the Rut 50K. I know that was just recently. You've been a pacer at Wasatch. You're an aid station volunteer at UROC. And I just want to say that I have an incredible respect for you for doing that, that it isn't a matter of, well, I can't race anymore, so leave me alone, I don't want to talk about it. But you have managed to continue your love and love for the mountains and love for the sport by contributing in more ways than one. And I think that is, I'd love to say that at the root of trail running and the trail running community, I think that is what we're really built upon, that it isn't always about the races we win and the number of buckles, but the community and the inspiration and the love for the mountains and being out there. I just found that really, really, really inspiring. But you had, in my question to you, and I'm sorry that I've kind of made it so long.
There is a question. Oh,
yeah. There is a question.
So at this point, Jeff, here comes the question. Yeah, the rest was just set up to get it in context.
I think that's good information to set up.
Every good question has a setup.
Mine tend to be a little bit longer than
that. Jeff, are you still there? I don't know how long the day is in Alaska.
But you touched on it a little bit earlier, just as far as like you get up for each day and, you know, kind of accept where you are. It is what it is. And just making it the best. It sounds like you're just kind of making the best for what it is. And that you are progressing, which is so great. How is it, I guess, for all of our listeners, which is, you know, I know there's going to be thousands of people that are going to be listening to this.
Well, two are left.
Somebody that is, for somebody that is struggling with maybe like a chronic injury or an illness, or they can't no longer run, or they're just kind of in that dark patch. What is it essentially that you feel was your turning point, or what is it that you latch on to each day that kind of helps you move forward in this new direction or just different direction?
I think it can you guys hear me all right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, we got you.
Okay, good. Sorry, I was having a little bit of interference, but I can hear you guys good now. I think it is what you touched on, Sally, like just liking and loving being out and kind of exploring things, you know, whether it's out in the mountains or wherever you are. I guess I really, really like going out, and even if I don't feel good, or even if I feel like I can only go for 15 minutes, you know, just going out and being outdoors and moving my body through nature and seeing what I see and experiencing what I experience. And it can be a 16 hour run, or it can be a 16 minute run. And either way, you have this opportunity every time you do it to experience something new and to see kind of something that you've never seen before, or to experience something emotionally that you've never experienced. And, you know, it was kind of fitting that you tied in, you talked about my friend Glenn who passed away this year, because that's the thing I learned from him more than anything was, I mean, anything you went and did with him, he was constantly so curious and so excited to see, like, you know, it could be a trail he had been on 500 times in his life, and he'd get really excited because, I wonder what the waterfall's going to look like today. You know, maybe there's just a slightly different amount of water than there was the other time we ran past it 3 days ago. And let's see what's it going to be like, and just kind of that excitement. And, you know, so even on times when, I guess the lowest times for me, when I really couldn't get out the door and experience that at all, I still just, I guess, took inspiration in knowing that those things were out there, and in my future I was going to sort of experience those things again. And
you know, I was taken aback too. I didn't realize Glenn was 75. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I first started reading, I did not realize that he was that age. I don't want to say he was that old, because I know some people listening will be like, that's not old. But But really, I mean, I would have thought, especially for anybody to spend so much time out on the trails with you, to be able to keep up with you. I mean, you have like some young, some really young, sprightly person, but it's, I think that was even more impacting. That impacted me even more about the story was like, here is this guy. And I personally love older people. I just, you gain so much wisdom and the stories that they have and really the experiences. I mean, it's awesome. But to realize this guy had spent so many hours with you out on the trails and that he essentially was like your greatest hero and your mentor and how quickly he, you know, he went. It's a pretty powerful story. And thank you for sharing the letter. The letter that you wrote to him was just... I mean, it was just incredible. And so your next post was so timely. You didn't blog again. That was in March of this past year. And then you didn't, it took you 6 months before you blogged again. But it was, yeah. I thought, that is so cool. Like, I don't know if you put those two together, but that is exactly how I read it. It was like, wow, he's kind of carrying on his legacy in a sense, this guy that inspired him and was a great mentor to him. He's now, you know, Jeff is doing the same thing. And it's realizing that, you know, the people that impact us the most, you know, it is, and the people that are heroes, it really doesn't have a lot to do with how many their accolades, you know, and, but the impression that they leave upon us and the way that make us feel. And, so it's neat to see you doing the same thing with your camps and volunteering and just being out there in the community and being so candid. I commend you for that and encourage you to keep that up because it's the most inspiring.
Hey, Jeff,
yeah,
I was,
well, thank you.
Yeah.
Jeff, I was on the trail this morning thinking that we were going to get a chance to speak with you today. And I started thinking about all the value that the run has for us in a ritual, in a daily experience that, It's like the Lance Armstrong book. It's not all about the bike, or it's all about the bike. It's not all about the race. You know, it's just not showing up with a bib on that defines what running is. Running is more of a way to connect with yourself and to shed off some of the stress that we have and to connect with people. Running is more than racing. Running is running. And I just want to throw that up to the table just to discuss and maybe get some, you know, feedback from you. And what you think about that is how does running fit in our lives and how does it change you and how does it make you feel when you miss it or when you get it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a huge point that saying, you know, that running and racing are very different, and I think they absolutely are. And you know, for me, I think of it as like, I guess I never really go out for a run and then wish that I hadn't gone running, you know, and like get home. And no matter how, even if I feel horrible, and I actually just yesterday I went for a little run and I was only out for 45 minutes or maybe an hour at the most. And I felt really, really pretty horrible. And I got home and my legs were all heavy and kind of dead feeling the rest of the day. And for whatever reason, it just didn't feel good. But it was still like, you know, laying down to go to bed last night. It was like, kind of glad I got out yesterday and thinking of sort of what I experienced on the run. And it was a very spontaneous run where I was just going to kind of jog up a trail. And then I decided like, well, there's this kind of goat path up the side of this mountain that I've always been curious whether it's a shortcut up the trail or not. So I think I'll just run up it pretty hard and time myself. And then the next time I'm out here, I'll take the main trail and kind of compare them and see if it's a shortcut or whatever. So it was just kind of this silly little game I played almost with myself yesterday. But then when I was going to bed last night, it was like, oh, I'm really glad I did that, even though I feel worn out from it and didn't feel good. And you know, whereas on at the flip side, you know, I have times for sure where if I suddenly get through a really busy day and I didn't have time to get out for a run or I didn't feel up to it physically, and then next thing I know, it's kind of evening and I'm like, generally like wish that I had gone out and ran. And so for me, that's kind of the easiest sort of summation of it is just like, I don't ever regret going for a run, but I do sometimes regret not going running. And so it's,
you know, the one thing that I like about this article is near the end, you basically come back and equate it back to lessons that you've learned running, mm-hmm. and how sometimes, you know, at mile 50 into 100, you're thinking, there's just no way that I'm going to be able to persevere this and finish it out. And you talked about, you know, Gordy Ainsley and his experience of just, as long as I can take one step, I'm going to take one step. Mm-hmm. And you just keep plugging along. And I think that was kind of put things in perspective, because all of us that have been runners or are runners know that feeling at some point in either a training run or a race where you just think, it's not worth it. It's just, I'm just going to give up. But you find yourself saying, okay, I'm going to make it to the next aid station. I'm going to make it to that curve in the trail. And I really like how you placed that and brought it back to running. There's no question there, by the way.
Yeah. What's that?
There was no question there. No. I just want to say I liked it.
Well, and one thing I kind of would add to that is tying into what I was just saying previously, like it just kind of, you know, a lot of that in those moments, I kind of look for, whether it is within a run or sort of dealing with something difficult in life, you know, injury or illness or something, like, I think it's just, kind of remembering and tapping into that excitement that you have about it in the first place. And like, oh yeah, like, even though I feel horrible, I'm excited to get up on this ridge and sort of see that, you know, oh yeah, there's this spot that I love in the mountains, and I'm going to get there, whether it takes me the hour that it usually takes me, or if it takes me a couple hours because I'm not feeling very well or whatever. And just trying to like maintain that curiosity and excitement about things. And, you know, and I think that certainly applies to just life in general.
Have you used some of the skills as an ultra runner to help you through this experience?
I think so. I mean, certainly, I guess I've always been, I feel like, a fairly patient person. And I think that my experiences running, and especially sort of racing, maybe help develop that patience even more. And I feel like there's certainly been times through this whole illness when I've been kind of really frustrated and impatient. But overall, I think I've done a really good job of being patient with it and not taking any one moment too seriously. And that's probably been the biggest thing.
Hey, Jeff, can we talk a little bit about your camps? I mean, running in Alaska has to be just fantastic. So what time of year is best to run there? What do your camps look like? How hard are they to get into?
I mean, it's really, for the vast majority of people, certainly the kind of the midsummer, June, July, August is the best time to run here. And so that's when I've scheduled the camps that I've done. And, you know, if you come kind of earlier, one of the earlier sessions, there's going to be a lot of running on snow and a lot of kind of glissading on, but it's all kind of firm snowpack. So it's not like winter snow running where you're punching into snow up to your thigh. You're just on top of firm snow that is set up from sun and rain and whatnot from the summer. And, but in the camps, in terms of getting in, it's been a really good balance. I've done them 4 years now, and I've really only ever had one person who wasn't able to come that really wanted to. But at the same time, they've been generally filled up. The number of sessions that I've done have been either at capacity or very close to it. And so I've had a good balance, I guess, of supply and demand. I think if I were doing any fewer sessions per season than I do, there may be kind of more of a demand and people getting on wait lists. But for the most part, as long as people decide to, you know, decide by about February, March of a given year, there's going to be space, at least in one of the sessions for the summer. So,
how many miles? If you were considering signing up for a camp, what kind of base mileage should you have? And what type of experience of a runner is best suited for your camps?
You know, I tell people that. Kind of what we're going to likely do during the week is going to be in the kind of 60 to 70 mile range in 5 days. But the, more specifically, we're going to spend a lot of time on our feet, and we end up being 20, sometimes 25 hours out on our feet in 5 days. So it's a lot of just like mountain kind of, like, I guess what I would call leisurely, like mountain exploration, where the actual terrain is really challenging and rugged, lots of vertical, lots of technical trail, but we take it really easy and kind of, you know, most of the uphill is all power hiking because it's so steep anyway. And then once you get up on the ridges, it's so beautiful that you want to stop and take photos.
I'm on your campsite right now while you're talking. The pictures are incredible. I mean, even if you are not an ultra runner,
if you're an amateur photographer, you should go to the camp.
I mean, it's breathtaking. I want to do your camp, and this is I always wanted to run in Alaska, but that sounds incredible. The whole week sounds, and you feed everyone too.
Yeah, it's full. I mean, once the people are here, everything's taken care of: lodging, food, transportation, and we just it's really more of a kind of a running vacation would be a better way to describe it, I think,
right.
Because it's very much geared towards just having a good time and going out in the mountains. And really, I tell people, and going back kind of to the original question, like, I tell people that are interested in camp, like, you know, make sure you've got the base mileage that you can come in and spend 20 hours in 5 days on your feet, but not at any point in that time is there going to be any premium on needing to move quickly. Like, we're going to move leisurely enough that everybody feels comfortable and relaxed. It's just more about being out in the mountains and enjoying the beauty of it, enjoying the camaraderie. And you know, and then when there's people that do want to run faster, I'm able to accommodate them because I have numerous local friends who kind of come out and sort of volunteer as guides. And they're always chomping at the bit to try to run ahead with the faster guys anyway. So it ends up generally working out for everybody. We've had a wide range of, you know, we've had sessions where we've had people who want to run, you know, twice as fast as what the group's going, and we've been able to accommodate that. So it really the biggest sort of precursor, the biggest requirement is just that somebody is curious and interested in spending a lot of time on the mountains. That's kind of it.
And Jeff, you're no slouch in the kitchen, correct? I mean, from watching Unbreakable, yeah, I learned that you know how to prepare a meal or two.
Yeah, I'm actually, and it's interesting timing because tomorrow I'm going to be starting my first shift back at Rainbow Foods, which is depicted in Unbreakable.
Yeah,
my first shift back there in like 4 years, really August of 2010 was the last time I worked there, really shortly after Unbreakable was filmed. And then I'm going to just start doing a little part-time, like 10 hours a week there beginning tomorrow. So,
If I was a local, I would be in there ordering stuff and asking running questions. You know, what's the best way to go up this hill? How do I run faster down?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, just when I used to work there, I remember I'd have people come in that were either new to town or visiting or something, and I worked there just a few months after Unbreakable had come out, so I guess I must have worked there in 2011. I guess it was. I thought 2010, but it was into 2011, and I'd get people to come in though, and then, they'd know who I was and come in for advice on trails around town and stuff.
Heck, since I brought up Unbreakable, I'll tell you what, there was no better year for J.B. Bennett to pick a movie to film. I mean, holy Toledo, and the ending.
He caught the lightning striking.
He did. And Jeff, that finish that you came up and just swooped up on Anton, that did not break. He didn't break. You just accelerated in ways that are just...
Inhuman.
Oh, my goodness. Fantastic story.
I just want to put a plug in because JB's a friend of Trail Runner Nation. it you can now download it. Mm-hmm. He has digital downloads that you can buy, and I'll link all that stuff. But
awesome.
You should have this on your phone so that you're, when you're riding the subway or in a bus or in church or
are you advocating not paying attention in church, Scott, and watching Unbreakable?
Yeah, heck yeah. you can watch it on your phone.
Yeah, that'll inspire you to run. I'm sure that's helped a lot of people get out of the house and onto the trail. And that's really what trail runners try to do to one another, is try to inspire them. And Jeff, you certainly have done that for us in a lot of ways. No matter what journey you're on or what phase of a run or through life, you stand up and you attack.
Well, and that's the reason why we decided to have you on, because I think most runners have a time in their life, or they know friends that have times in their lives,
or anticipate having that time coming up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No
where,
doubt.
Where you may run into a similar situation. And I think your advice in this article is just freaking brilliant, that you don't have to define yourself by the miles you put in every week. You don't have to define yourself by the races, number of races you race every year. Take every day, the old ultra running?
Take what the trail gives you?
Take what the trail gives you. So, you know, you get up, you do what your best, and be happy about that.
Be satisfied.
And hopefully things will get better. So thank you very much for sharing. Hopefully you realize it helps more people than maybe what you think.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. And I, you know, a lot of it is helpful to me too, and being kind of open about my situation and being still very involved in the community is, you know, it's something certainly I choose to do it, because I think it helps a lot of different people and to, you know, to be better runners or better people, but also I know that it makes me a better person. And so, you know, to some degree, I think some of it's selfish in that sense. And so it's a two-way street for sure. So,
well, we're glad that you're still around, and you're still out in the community doing things, because you are a wealth of knowledge. And whether you're out there winning races or whether you're out there volunteering at an aid station, you know, what you have learned you can transfer to us, and we really appreciate that.
Now, thank you.
Hey, now Jeff, it just flashed into my head as we close here that now I go back to Unbreakable and I'm thinking about that pasta that you had out. I don't know if you're the cook that I'm thinking you are, because that looked like some pretty, you know, I'm not so sure that's gourmet.
He got the pasta, and you noticed, he ran around the campground and he was picking little herbs and spices out of the woods and putting moss and stuff in. It looked really good. I would have eaten it.
Maybe I just saw the beginning phase of it.
Yeah.
It was definitely not a gourmet meal, but I'm very, at that time anyway, I was very particular in terms of pre-race, like night before the race. A lot of people have a very particular meal they want to eat, or they have food, and for me, I don't, it's not about the food at all. I just want like kind of some private space away from any kind of hubbub whatsoever. And it was even a stretch for me to agree to kind of have JB come by where I was camping for a little bit and film. And you know, the reason I was sort of really willing to do that is because he came by for 15 minutes. It wasn't like a long thing or whatever. But yeah, I'd rather eat just some crappy little pasta meal, open up a can of tomatoes and pour it on some noodles and be in my own space and be able to do that, than to like go out to a restaurant somewhere in town where there's just going to be a bunch going on, or there's going to be all these other runners there before the race. And I just kind of really like my quiet little private space. So sometimes achieving that means like just hunkering down to the little campground.
That was impactful, and that was cool to see.
You know what? I have a digital copy. Tonight I'm going to watch it.
Good.
Because it's such a good movie. I think I've watched it a dozen times.
See if he has any sprouts or sprigs inside that pasta.
He does. I'm telling you, it's good. You could put that on a five-star restaurant. I don't know how they rate restaurants.
You've never been to a five-star war.
I bet you could put that on a plate and put a little sprig of something, and you could sell it for a lot of money.
Sure, you can. Well,
Don and mascot. If you guys want one of Jeff's recipes, I think JunoEmpire.com. Jeff, do you remember
back
in
2009? Well, you've really done some research, McCray.
I have.
You're looking for Jeff Rose recipes?
No, this is just early. This is my earlier research I found. It's the title of the article is Running Man Eating Machine. And they talked about how you consume like 5,000 to 6,000 calories a day, which is like everyone's dream to be able to consume that much calories and run so well. But anyway, they published your or you submitted, obviously, your lasagna roll-ups recipe is in that article. So people that are listening.
I vaguely remember that, yeah.
Yeah, it was 5 years ago that it was published. Yeah. But you can Google.
I'll link it.
JunoEmpire.com. You can link it. But the title of the article is Running Man Eating Machine, Jeff Rose. And you can find out how to make his amazing lasagna roll-ups. And I love a good lasagna. So I just might have to make those.
Well, I want to make sure that we'll link these websites, but there's the Alaska Mountain Running Ultra Camp. What did I say?
The Alaska Mountain
Ultra Running Camp. I got that right.
Yeah. It's a long name, but at this point I've gone with it for 4 years, so I don't want to. I thought about shortening the name, and I was like, well, now it's established. So.
No, it's a cool logo.
You're an ultra runner. It's supposed to be long. It's appropriate.
Yeah.
So we'll link that. We'll also link Jeff's blog, which I love the title, Fumbling Towards Endurance. That sounds like what I do. I fumble.
We experiment and find out what works. That's the fumbling.
So, Jeff, thank you for writing there. Thanks for joining us. We hope that the Trail Runner Nation enjoyed a trail run today with you. So go to trailrunnernation.com. You can check out all of the other podcasts. You can get yourself some performance-enhancing Cocapellis. Pay close attention because in the next few weeks we're going to have some wearables. Our fall wearable pre-order is going to be coming up, and there is some pretty cool stuff coming.
Oh, yeah.
So get out and run.
Mas.